Thank you. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you see me? I didn't think so. I don't know. I mean, I need an Apple box up here, but I can see you guys. I might have to just stand like this so I can see you a little bit better. Not a problem. We don't have to be complicated, right? I'm Mary Lee, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. You know? Whoa! Now I'm really freaked out. Okay, now I'm really freaked out. All right. So, you got it? Okay. Well, you know, first of all, I'd like to just thank you guys for having a convention. You know, when I first came into AA, it was 1984. I was 24 years old, and I was extremely confused. I was very sad. I looked like a boy. I had a shaved head, jeans, black t-shirt, and a really horrible attitude. And I came into AA because of attraction. You know, they have the attraction, not promotion. I was attracted to the fellowship. At that time, I didn't know that you had conventions. They probably had them then. I was confused. My world was very, very small. My world was me and the belief that at some point it was going to happen, you know? Life was going to happen. It was going to be great. It was going to be amazing, like it is in America now, amazing, right? And because I was the consequences of, like, maybe a wild night of drinking between my mother, who was a chorus line dancer, and my father, who was a plumber in Virginia, the very southern part of Virginia. If there's a movie called Loving, if you want to know what the countryside is like in Virginia, they do a very good job of it. If you want to know what my childhood was like, I had my first drink when I was 4 years old, probably in some milk. So whenever I read that part in the Big Book where it says, like, he put the shot into the milk, I think about my childhood. And I'm pretty sure that if you had met me when I was 24 years old, I would have told you about a childhood that sounded like something out of, like, maybe Gone with the Wind, you know? We had pigs, we had cows, you know, the sun was shining, the corn was like, it was dancing, blah, blah. And on that, well, there was one thing that happened that was quite bad, and I'm just going to go on and say it because I figure that whatever I say here today, God is channeling it, because this is new for me. Doug did the heavy lifting, so I'm just going to say whatever comes out here, right, about me and the Big Book. But, you know, when I was a kid, from age 4 to 9, I was sexually abused by a man who was in a relationship with my mother. So in my early 20s, when I came into AA, I was able to really work with that. You know, I met some nice people, some men. The fellowship was wonderful. No one asked me to do service. I didn't understand why, you know. No one asked me to be their sponsor. I mean, people were afraid, I think, to even ask me to do coffee. But I traveled, you know, on that. I had a sponsor, a woman that I thought was exciting and amazing. She was what I thought I wanted to be. And I did therapy on that situation that I just told you about. And for 17 years, I didn't take a drink. I lived in Texas. I lived in LA. I lived in, I guess those are the places. And then I moved to Sweden. And as I was traveling around in those years with those issues in AA, in the fellowship, it never dawned on me that I hadn't read the Big Book. And I remember a few times there'd be people who would come up and say, like, you know, like, especially those crusty old men, you know. I was young, I was angry, I had an edge. And they're like, you need to read the big book, right? And I'm like, I just didn't get it. So I didn't have a problem with a God thing. I was one of the people who just saw the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and I made it up, you know? So it's like, you know, you can be the person who it says here, it's like, you know, the lazy ones, or you can have the ones like me with a lot of imagination, right? So in the 80s, AA was something like, you know, just go out and get the money. I don't see that anywhere in the big book. In the 90s, by the time I got to Sweden, it was like, you just show up and suit up and do some slogans, live and let live. Absolutely no connection with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm the consequence of probably a pretty hot night of drinking. Both those alcoholics died wet. My 17 years of sobriety ended with me going out for a relapse of 10 years. Not a fun time. Not a fun time. Maybe for 6 months. but I was always like knowing, you know, this may not end well. Because if you're in the fellowship, you kind of hear some stuff. So you pick up some things like, well, you know, you end up in prison and a mental institution, blah, blah. I mean, you pick up some things, kind of like a, you know, like the, you have the salmon, you know, when they're spawning up the stream, like, you know, and they get caught in this, you know, you can catch some things in AA, just on the fellowship, and maybe making a little bit of coffee. So actually, that was the consequences of not reading the program. And that was the consequences for me of not having a sponsor and not listening to other people. And I would not suggest that for anybody. So if you are new, if you have like a month or two or three or four, like whenever, I think that my home group is the international group in Stockholm. Yes, I'm telling you, we're a lively bunch. We have some stuff going on at times, you know? And I learned this time to put myself in the middle. But that wasn't the first time I was in the international group. When I first came to Sweden, there were three people in the international group, and I was one of them, and I hated everybody, probably including myself, right? And I was like, you know, you're not doing AA, blah, having never read the big book. You're not doing this, you're not doing that, blah, blah, blah. So I went out. Guess what? Nobody called me. I was shocked, like, they didn't miss me. I mean, really, three people, right? And maybe somebody coming, and there was this guy named Bill G, who came through. I hated him, because, you know, he was one of those big book thumpers. So when I came back on my belly. You know, in the South, they have this expression called lower than a snake. That's how I felt, lower than a snake. You can't get much lower than that, is what they would also say. And my friend Gordon, who was probably, he was actually my AA friend, he 12-stepped me. I called him, and he picked up the phone. And I said, Gordon. He was like, Mary Lee. He was Scottish. Anybody Scottish in here? He's like, Mary Lee. I said, Gordon, I can't stop drinking. And he laughed, and I laughed. He laughed me all the way back into the international group, in the group that I'd actually started because they were doing it wrong for 1 week, right? He kept it up. Gordon, remember Gordon. But when I walked in, you know, there were all these people in the room. But I knew deep down inside of me that I didn't have another chance. I didn't have another, what do you call it, drunk or whatever. It was like, it's going to be this or nothing. And also Gordon knew I knew. Gordon died 3 months later of, like, out of the blue, he found out he had a brain tumor. I think it was 3 months later. It went really fast. And can you imagine, like, in your, you see your good friend, the only friend in AA you have, right? After going all over the place, all over different countries and stuff, going to AA fellowship, he dies. And he was still 12-stepping me on the bed because he knew how important it was. He was like, Mary Lee, I still have it written down. And every once in a while, I'll go through those things, you know. He's like, you know, he said a lot of things. We'll go to that. But the main thing I knew was he said to me, I should meet this woman, Chris, who should be up here today. And for those of you who have met Chris, you know that we're a little different. Now, one of the things we have in common, though, is that she's African-American. And so when I met her, I thought, oh, my God, Gordon must be a racist. The two black women in Sweden, he put us together. Now, that's how crazy, right, I was. Right? But again, I learned something. After 17 years of, like, white-knuckling it, and being just having kind of a really rough life and being kind of nasty to people. And I learned that I could put those thoughts on a shelf and just do what little came in that made sense. And I didn't know if that was God or AA or my group or whatever. And I think that my friend David is here. You saw this whole journey, right? I mean, it was pretty, yeah. So I remember when I got to Gordon said, you have to meet Chris. And at that time, I didn't know he was giving me my sponsor. I didn't get it, right? I was like, yeah, sure, Gordon, I'll meet Chris. And when I met Chris, I don't know if you guys have seen the Simpsons, you know, that cartoon, The Simpsons. There's a woman named Madge, and she has a voice like this. That's Chris. Right? So I'm like, and you know, at that point, like I said, I was kind of not as edgy as I thought I had been, you know, before. I had a lot of debt. I had millions of kroner debt. People didn't like me. There were articles in the paper about how things were going. It didn't matter. It was fake news, you know. But I was really, I mean, I really needed those groups. And then I had Chris. So Chris said, yeah. She's like, buy a big book and meet me at this hotel, the Elite Hotel. I'm like, shit. You know, it's like, okay. So I just went, and I remember I used to have this little wig, and I was like, so like I straightened the wig up, I put on a jacket, and I walked into the Elite Hotel, and there was Chris with her big book. And I'm telling you, she started with the cover. And she said to me, you know what? I know you had 17 years sobriety, but I'm gonna treat you like a newcomer. Is that okay? I'm like, yes, yes, of course, yes. You're not gonna say like no to that, right? And at the time I was also living in New York, and so I was reporting to those meetings what Chris was saying to me, and they were laughing, you know? Because I mean, I'm sure that if she walked into that meeting today, they would recognize her with that voice. So she said, and then she goes through, and she made me read every single word, like even the blank page. She said, it's blank, because that's where you can put your notes, right? And then she said, Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. Mary Lee, it says here, recovered. It doesn't say recovering, it says recovered. Isn't that great? I'm like, mm-hmm, yes, mm-hmm, yeah, really great. Now, at this point, I can only put together maybe two brain cells. I remember I could feel the wind blowing through my head. I do not suggest that you go out for 10 years of a relapse, and you certainly shouldn't go out and marry people and then get divorced. You know, just all sorts of really wonderful things. And then she said things to me like, she said, the fourth edition. Mary Lee, that means that there were other editions. And you, I mean, I know you might think that sounds kind of like obvious, but not for an alcoholic who's had a 10-year relapse, who's lower than a snake. It's like, yeah, wow, yes. But there was one thing I got, and that was, shit, should have read this book. You know? Because that meant that there were some other people who actually recovered from alcoholism. In the 80s, they said, recovering, right? Tony Robbins said, just do it. I did all those things, you know? I was on that on that highway, I realized, to hell, but I thought it was up, right? But here, there it was, a promise. If you do these things, you can get what these thousands of men and women, not one, thousands. So suddenly, that little girl who had been raped, who had been set aside, neglected by two alcoholics who couldn't, you know, do anything, couldn't do their lives, but they could do that, right? Who was told that she was a mistake. Suddenly, I had an answer to my spiritual malady. She also said, Mary Lee, this is a spiritual program. I thought it was a disco the first time. At some point, it was going to happen, you know, like the guy was going to come down, choose me, we'd go away, and I would have that family that I always dreamt of. But here was something deeper. She also made me read, you know, the fine print, Alcoholics Anonymous World Service Incorporated, New York City, 2001. And it was like, Mary Lee, you see, there's a place where this is. It's in New York. It's the headquarters. I'm not kidding you. And she was enthusiastic. And then we read the copyright, all the years, you know, and like, and the every single thing, all the literature. And then we read the table of contents. And from that, by the time we did that, I realized how much of my life I had made up things, you know? And how much of my life I kind of missed the details of things. I also understood that if this woman, she was going like, you know when I came in and I read this stuff, Mary Lee, it really excited me because I knew I was going to get this. I knew I was going to get that. Am I right? That's how Chris says it. You're going to get these things if you do the work, if you do it the way they did it. So what I learned, what I started realizing was, what's interesting is I should learn what the program is. And then maybe one day I can also give it, not my version of it, but give it to someone else. So I think that the people who like my sponsee here, Signe, she's a Danish person. You guys know her. You've probably seen me in the rooms. When new people come in, I go up to them. I'm like, and the first thing's like, yeah, how you doing? Yeah, I'm really, yeah, do you have a sponsor? Right? And they usually think I'm asking. In the beginning, they would run away. You know, they're like, yes, yeah, so hi, right? But, you know, I ask that because, and I'll even say, hey, look, I'll be your temporary sponsor, just so they don't go away and possibly like waste 10 years and hurt other people and places and things, right? So we read the forewords. We read the first, the second, the third forward. And what I've started to realize is that there was so much information in the forewords. It was a little bit like what you were talking about, like how the big book came about, how the fellowship came about, what service was. And I think that you've covered quite a lot of the beginning of this book. But that is the big book and Mary Lee. And I have a very personal relationship with the big book. I'm now 7.5 years sober. You may applaud. It's a miracle, because after 17 years and 10 years out, I really didn't think I'd get back. I don't know if anybody has had that feeling, but I remember when I, after about a week, when that craving went away, the first time, it went away within the first hour. I was 24 years old, I was really happy, and there was lots and lots of fellowship. It just went away. But this time, coming back, that craving stayed a little bit longer, you know? And there's this thing called the monkey on your back. I don't know if you guys have that thing, but I remember from the South, they would go like, alcohol was a monkey on my back. That's what it felt like. I felt like I had claws in my back, right? But I didn't tell anyone. I just sat there because I figured, well, the service that I could do, even though I did not have a thought, if I sat in the room, somebody might think, hey, I'm like her. And they might stay and get the message. That was before I could be. And then Chris also said, after we did the fifth step, she said, now you have to raise your hand and be a sponsor. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. You know, after the fifth, I did it. I raised my hand. And I was always so happy that no one said, and I'll take that one. You know, I was so happy. Unfortunately, one day I did get a sponsee. Whew, that was rough. But so I guess probably what you're understanding by now, I hope you understand, is that by the time I got to the ninth step, can you imagine what was the first thing on my amends list? Eighth step. The first thing on my amends list was AA. Because by that time I realized all the hours that I had spent for 17 years in rooms like this, not like spreading the message, maybe spreading people to another direction. All the years that people called me and I talked at them for hours about nothing, right? So this is my amen. Chris is so funny because she called me, she goes like, Mary Lee, we're going to Copenhagen. Don't you want to go to Copenhagen? I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm still doing that. As a matter of fact, she told me to do things and I just made a list of things to do, right? And I put them on the shelf and I go like, one day they will make sense. All right. Now, the first thing I want to tell you about is that these 7.5 years have not been easy coming back. I did not have a relationship. I did exactly what Chris said. She said, you know, it's probably a good idea for you not to have a relationship for about a year. I did a year and a half. Then I got into a relationship, but it was very difficult, right? I also have gone back to work. I also am cleared of all the debt that I had. All these things, and it wouldn't have been there without this program. But since life goes up and down like this, sometimes I'm on the sofa with drool coming out of my mouth, right? I have no children. I don't even have a dog, thank God. The last dog I had, I'm telling you, that dog was really, I was in my last recovery. I went to see the veterinarian. The veterinarian told me that the dog had was neurotic. Right? And he looked at me, and I'm like, oh, really? And you know how, you know, when you come home, most dogs are like, yeah, hey, right? My dog was like, oh, shit. I would walk away. But I didn't have a drink. So, you know, and it's so funny because I think one of the things about the program in the big book, which is in the big book, right, is that whenever I get questions, whenever I get into that situation, I just go back to the big book. And I go like, okay, Mary Lee, what can you do in the big book? What are these things that Chris said? What's going on with the sponsees? What service? She says, throw yourself into service. It says that in the big book. That's part of the program. You know, if you have sex problems, throw yourself into service. It doesn't say like dance or like kind of like ease your way into service. It says throw yourself into service. So I threw myself into service with some sponsees this year. We did a big book study. Right. And I'm telling you, working with other alcoholics is a really, it's like fireworks in every way, right? So it's like, you know, what I did was, I was literally lying on the sofa and I had my computer there and I was like, Google Docs. We will read 164 pages of the big book. And I did that because I had these women, you know, and you can imagine since I'm a woman and they really needed to get the program. I needed to make sure they read all 164 pages. So we did a big book study. And I think we started organizing in November of last year, and we had it in March. March, right? Yeah, March. And And we had little, we did it in like little clusters of committees. Because what Chris said to me was, and this is the part that I didn't get, never mind the fact that the program, the humility that it talks about in the big book, it's modesty. It's like the middle way. It's not like the kind of grandiosity of like being like lower than a snake, you know? It's not the grandiosity of being humiliated because your actions have disturbed somebody. It's just modest. It's the middle way, another way. So I figured, okay, let me try to do a way that no one gets upset. So I gave people committees, and they could do it however they wanted to do it, as long as we kind of got it back on the document. And interestingly enough, you know, usually it's a bit difficult to work with other women. It was just my sponsees, but it got done. This big book study happened. We made, I think that we were plus on our budget before we even opened the doors. And you can imagine, most of us didn't even know if anybody would show up. We read the big book in English in Sweden, and I think through the doors, we had about 80 people for that two-day workshop. And, you know, in the fourth step, it talks about, in the big book, it talks about your talents. It talks about needs and stuff like that too, but also talks about your talents. It talks about God-given abilities and things like that. And so when I was so upset because I lost this relationship maybe for the fifth time and really just not feeling really good, by the time I finished putting together that workshop, I felt great. And I think that one of the things about the big book is that after working with others, it has this chapter on to the wives. And if you have read if you've worked that chapter, I think that maybe you would have the experience like I had when I worked it with Chris, which was all the other chapters are about me, the alcoholic, my perspective. Like, yeah, you know, I'm powerless over alcohol and working with others, you know, going out and doing a 12-step with someone. But by the time it gets to the wives, suddenly I got to see myself, how other people saw me, the impact I had on other people's lives. And to me, that's the miracle of this book. When these alcoholics, first they were like the first 100, when they put it together, they were like, you know what, dramaturgically, you know, they were very, very, they made it very, very simple. If we talk about the alcoholic, we're all interested in ourselves, right? I mean, self-centeredness is, that's what we share. But if they say, now this is to the wives, and you're reading about things like, I love this one. Among us are wives, relatives, friends, this is page 104, whose problems have been solved, as well as some who have not found a happy solution. And you also think like, whoa, that's right. There's a world out there of other alcoholics in all sorts of different occupations. And then it goes on to tell the wife, we now take it as your partner, how to deal with the alcoholic. When society starts to impinge, and you can imagine on this, I think on page 106, it says, the bill collectors, the sheriffs, the angry taxi drivers. First of all, I had a lot of bill collectors, so I could identify with that. It's like, that's right. Now, granted, you have to understand, I didn't have a husband. But I realized I had a lot of people around me who were really impacted by the fact that I had bill collectors, not just the bill collectors. Also, I've made a lot of taxi drivers very angry. I don't know about you guys, but I'm still, still have a problem with taxi drivers. And they said that we have tried, it goes on and on about the wives. But if you read those chapters, it's really to the alcoholic. Again, about how how careful and how clear. It shows another way of how to love your partner and how to care for your children. And then we have to the employer, and you can imagine it's the same thing. And it's always cases about how the alcoholic has impacted on other people's lives. So that was a miracle for me. And then if you look at the family afterwards, that's where you get the slogans. It talks about another case. It says, here's a case in point. One of our friends is a heavy smoker. So it starts to talk about all sorts of other issues too. There was no doubt he overindulged. And I don't know about you, but when I quit drinking the second time, I really ate a lot of chocolate. I think I had a Snickers addiction. I could eat four of those in a row. And so instead of being the nice, thin person I had been the first time around in my recovery, I kind of got a little bit bigger. I was indulging, but Chris kept saying, you know, don't think about that so much, right? But it says here, seeing this and meaning to be helpful, his wife commenced to admonish him about this, sort of complaining, right? He admitted he was overdoing these things, but frankly said, he was not ready to stop. His wife is one of those persons who really feels there's something rather sinful about the commodities, so she nagged. I don't know about you guys, but I have a lot of people in my life who nag about these things. It's like, you know, you're supposed to be eating this way or that way. And he says, her intolerance finally threw him into a fit of anger. He got drunk. So what, since I live alone, I had to turn the committee off and just let myself do the program at least once all the way through, right? And the wonderful thing about the 12 steps, which are in this book, even though Dr. Bob stayed under the radar, Bill Wilson was a little bit more known, and I think he got the Time Man of the Century for having written the big book. Now, AA, we make no big deal about that. There's also a movie. But the amazing thing is that why, of all the people in the century, did Bill Wilson get that from Time Magazine? Because the 12 steps has helped me with so many things, right? I mean, you have 12-step programs on everything, but just reading the book a few times, going through the steps over and over again, I get to deal with my other problems. And it says, of course, our friend was wrong, dead wrong. And again, I learned that if I don't read all the way through and get that part of the recovery, then it really is a matter of life and death. And if I'm going to actually share the program with sponsees, it really should be as close to possible to how I got it. So I don't veer far, actually, from what Chris told me to do. Next year, we're going to do the big book study again, because I think that since now, when I came to the program, I was 24. I'm much older now. But I figure like this. If I continue to make that one amend, which is to share how I joined the ranks of those thousands of men and women who use this book to recover from alcoholism, then that's probably in itself a good enough service. However, I do, as it says, continue to try to grow in service and usefulness. Since I'm only 7.5 years sober, I'm not, I can't claim any great spiritual feats. I can't claim a wonderful relationship. As a matter of fact, pretty much I can't claim anything. But I hope that having listened to me today, that I will have inspired you to not just take a second to reconsider what people say to you and your sponsors and your other fellows, but get out, do service, hit up against some people. There's a word called rancor that in here, and I take it, I think it means just kind of like having difficulty with other people, right? But by actually working, reading the big book over and over again, I'm getting that experience that my sponsor said. I read it now and I'm like, oh my God, yeah, I want that. If I want that, I just go back and I do that, you know? Like now, recently, I realized I have to do it. It says rarely have we seen a person fail, you know, but if you're not honest, you know, you're probably not going to make it. Well, obviously, before I was not honest, but now I'm actually beginning to feel when I tell a lie, even the white lies, you know, that you use to kind of get around, expedite things, you know. You want to use the bathroom. Oh, I'm pregnant. Oh, yeah, sure. Right? And then when I'm coming out, I'm like, what doesn't feel good about this, right? When the people are going like, good luck, you know? I'm like, you know, that wasn't a good thing. Now, is it going to hurt anybody? It hurts me. It actually is the beginning of what I know is a slip. Because the next time, it'll be a different lie. And then a deeper lie. And before I know it, I won't be standing up here on this amazing platform. I won't be feeling like I have absolutely nothing to say, but hoping that you get something. I'll be outside, you know, like rolling down the street, you know, probably not doing so well. And what I can say is that both my parents, I was thinking about, in the big book, it talked about people of a man of bad intention. I had, their words, I mean, sometimes I just like think of the word, people of bad intention. And what I figured, I was going like, shit, I'm gonna have to stand up in front of these people. I have no idea what I'm gonna say. I've read the big book, I've done these things. But you know what I can say to you, as I'm finishing up, I have the best intention for your sobriety. And that's it. Ooh, is that okay? Yeah.